Thank you for fixing this. My anxiety was already at a 10, and I'm like, oh God, I'm gonna have to hold this thing. Jesus Christ. I'm Iris, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Will. That was great. This was actually my first home group in 2008. So thanks for having me, guys. My sobriety date is December 18th, 2011. I just celebrated 12 years, and that is a miracle for any of us, you know? Oh God, it's on video and everything. Can I turn it? Last time I spoke here, by the way, I broke that. There was a recorder here and I broke it. It fell and it shattered. And I was like, okay, I'm just never gonna come back. And I haven't, this is the first time back, like for real. So thanks for asking me to speak. Doing the Lord's work. I'm so nervous, I'm sorry. Okay. I also have a home group, and that is on Tuesday nights. It's at Club 3333. It's a big book study, and I was the gong girl for like a hot minute. The gong girl is the one that, like, when your time's up, you hit the gong, and it's like land the plane, you know, like time to stop. So I did that for a minute. I've done all sorts of commitments. You guys taught me that coming here and telling you I was going to continue to come back and showing up and having a job to do, it would build self-esteem, you know, and I didn't have that for like a really long time in my life. I think when I first got sober in 2008, I was like a shell of, I was like a shell of a person. I don't think I looked at myself in the mirror for like 2 years before I came here the first time. And God, that's, a lot has changed for the better. I was debating on, you know, I hate knowing that I have to speak enough in advance because I'm in the shower and I'm like, what am I going to say? That's going to be profound. And like nothing that I think I'm going to say, I'm actually going to say. I'm just going to probably say some stupid shit instead. You know, but I'm extremely self-centered still, if that gives you any inclination. When Will was just talking about how his second thought in the car was, what about those guys? I need to make sure they get a ride home. I looked at my lovely friend over there and I said, well, my thought would be, they'll figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, they'll be fine. Like, I'm still so selfish. And, you know, like, they'd be surrounded by AAs. So, like, they'll all get home okay. And, like, Jesus. I mean, the truth is, for me, is that I need this whether you need me or not. I need you more than you need me. And that has been proven to me sober and not. And by not, I don't mean not drinking. I mean dry. You know, I mean living and just not drinking. There is a huge difference between living sober, having a completely different lifestyle because of a psychic change that I've had, versus just not drinking, scratching the days off the calendar like, 1 day, 2 days. I was not AA's biggest fan when I first got here in 2008. I didn't get it. I didn't want to get it. There were a lot of shiny, happy people who came after me hardcore when I got here. I mean, these girls like trampled me and I was like, get me out of here. You know, like this is, I can't believe this. I'm 24 and this is my life, you know? And I thought it was over. I remember thinking my life was over when I came here. And yeah, to a degree, my drinking, alcoholic, active addiction was over, you know, thank God. It's real funny what I've done as an alcoholic, thinking that like even something better is still terrifying. You know what I mean? Like even though like AA has saved my life, given me a completely different life, it's still like, eh, you know, like I'm so used to drinking and living selfishly that anything outside of that for me was scary, even if it was going to be better. You know, and it is, it's true that it's hard. It is. It's easier for me the longer I've been sober. It's been easier, you know. But in the beginning, when I first got sober, both times, I've now had two shots at this. I was sober for about 2 years, from 2008 to 2010. And then I was really dry. You could have lit a match around me and I would have exploded. And it was a matter of time for me. And if you knew me at that time, it was not a surprise. But the thing with me is that I'm a people person. I've always been a people person. I was never a shy kid, ever. I ran my mouth, I still do, but I kept people at arm's length, and I can still do that. So, like, you might know me, but you don't really know me, you know? And you guys wouldn't have that. You weren't having that at all. The thing about AA for me has been we have this common problem, and my problem is alcohol. And when I drink it, I can't say I'm going to stop. I can't say when or if. There's no guarantee for me at all. I lose all power of choice in the matter. It doesn't matter if I want to drink or not. I'm drinking. And to live differently like that is a tall order for an alcoholic who, at 2 years sober in 2010, I burned my life to the ground sober. And what that looks like for me is I had no God, you know, not really. Again, I told you guys I did. And I got so complacent and self again that I would put my keys under my bed. Then that would force me to get on my knees to pray. And I wouldn't even do that. I would get on my knees and be like, I gotta get my car, you know? Like, I mean, I was just, I don't know what's worse for us, being drunk and not knowing a solution, or being sober, knowing a solution, and just not working this program. It's been my experience over and over again, even now, when I don't do the work in here, which, by the way, it doesn't feel like work anymore. It is a lifestyle. You know, it's not, I have to go to my home group meeting. It's like, I have to answer the phone. No, the things that I've been taught to do here have allowed me to have a life, you know, that like the gifts of just, it's not even just not about drinking anymore. You know, it's like I'm a present human being. I'm a decent member of society, you know, which is not anything I really ever asked for. I preferred to be alone, you know? I preferred for everybody to get off my back. I remember thinking that if you had anything to say about my drinking, you became an obstacle to me. You weren't a friend anymore. I wasn't dating you anymore. My parents, you could, you know, do whatever you needed to do. But, like, if you said anything to me about my drinking, you became a problem. Not that I was the problem or I had a problem, but you became a problem because you cared too much. You know what I mean? Like, mind your business. Mom, who I'm living under her roof and stealing out of her purse, you know, like army crawling to take her car keys. I mean, of course it's her business, but I live in this like really self-centered bubble where I'm convinced that what I'm doing doesn't affect anybody else. And that is the farthest thing that I can tell myself from the truth. Because the truth is, sober or not, I affect people. I affect people today. I affect people no matter what I do. We all do, you know? And so I drank initially, let me just say this. I loved alcohol. I loved alcohol. It was the love of my life. It was the thing, the only thing for a very long time that made me feel just okay, just at peace. I never felt peace as a kid. I was restless, irritable, and discontent as long as I can remember. You know, there wasn't a turning point for me in that. It was like I was riddled with all sorts of stuff that I don't know if kids think about or not, but I did. I woke my mom up in the middle of the night sometimes and be like, we're all gonna die, aren't we? And, you know, she'd be like, not today. So, like, it's, you know, you have school in 3 hours or whatever. You know, and I mean, I was plagued a lot by my own brain. And I remember feeling like, you know, now that I'm sober, like, it really took me hostage in ways that I don't think I could have controlled even if I tried. I tried and I couldn't. I guess I could say that. I did try. But I did everything young, you know, I did everything young. I'm from Massachusetts. We moved here when I was in grade school for one of my dad's many jobs. My dad is a lovely human being. Because of this program, I will say this, I am allowed and it's preferred to see people as just sick human beings. And my dad is a sick human being and always has been and has his own set of problems just like any other person on this earth. You know, and my relationship with my parents was always really tumultuous. We fought a lot. We moved a lot. We didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have any money. There were four living children. My parents had a daughter, my sister Amy, who passed away when she was a baby, and she was before me. And my parents just like incapable, and not because they're bad people, but they just didn't have the tools themselves, you know? And I'm a big like advocate for like hurt people. And I know today because of my steps and because of God and because of you guys that like my parents really did the best they could. Now that's not the story I told you when I got here. The story I told you when I got here was it's because of them. I'm here because my dad's an asshole and my mom is a codependent, you know? And like, nope, it's got nothing to do with them. Genetic or not, or whatever you want to call it, however you want to slice this thing, if you have it, you have it, you know? And like the logistics don't really matter. The important thing is like what I do with it. I also happen to have three other siblings who don't have this thing, who lived under the same roof as me, you know? And so like, what's the excuse, Iris? There is none, you know? We moved here and I was wildly uncomfortable with the entire state of Florida. I was not into it. And like lizards everywhere and shit. It was just very strange. To me, it was very strange. And I would come home and I would complain like a lot to my parents. My mom specifically, because she was the one that was there. And I'd say, just take me home, you know? And she's like, we can't, your father. I'm like, where is he? You know, like he's not even here to defend himself. And like, I mean, that's the kind of conversations I had with my parents when I was a kid. You know, I just was very like, this is the way it is. This is the way I see it. So like you guys all have to know. And that is carried into my sobriety. I've lost friends that way. my mouth. It's always been my mouth. So I drank young. I was in sixth grade when I had my first drink. And I went to Catholic school growing up. And I was at my friend's bar mitzvah. Girl, bar. But, thank you, I'm a Catholic. Not anymore, but I was, okay? So I don't know these things. I was at my friend's bat mitzvah. Again, grade school. How old are you with a bat mitzvah? Sixth grade? Yeah, you're 13. Okay, I'm 13. And I get hammered at this girl's bat mitzvah, okay? Her cousin was like the bartender for the adults. And I was like, can I have a rum and... I asked for a rum and coke. And he was like, sure, which is creepy, but... I drank the rum and cokes. I had multiple rum and cokes. And we ended up, you know, a bunch of kids drinking, playing truth or dare. And I made out with a Jewish boy named Joshua. And I got in huge trouble for that. Well, no, maybe not. Well, probably both, actually. But I got in trouble for drinking. And probably a boy accompanying me. And that would follow me until I got here, you know. That didn't stop. And so my parents were like, okay, you're a kid, whatever. But I mean, I remember being like, I can't wait for that to happen again. Not even Josh, whatever. But the alcohol, you know, like, I can't wait. There's someone in the rooms that has said this before, and it's always stuck with me. Like, I always felt like it was a nameless sense for being unfit for reality. That's how I felt. A nameless sense of being unfit for reality. This world was too much. I couldn't cope. And I didn't, you know. And my drinking, when I became old enough, not legally, but old enough, I got a fake ID and I used it. I was like 17 when I got it. And so I was Natalie for the next 5 years, 17, 18, 19, 20, 4 years. I was Natalia, you know, but Natalie. And I used it. I used it everywhere in Tampa. I used it everywhere in Tampa. And so by the time I turned 21, everyone, like, my favorite people, the bartenders, they were like, what the hell, you know? And I was like, I don't understand how you didn't know that, but, you know, whatever, I guess they don't care. And I ended up being a bartender in Boston. I moved back home to Boston because I thought Florida was an issue. By the time I was 21, I had had a string of arrests, whether it was my mouth or my hands or trespassing. I got arrested a lot for trespassing. I would go to the same place every weekend because that's where my people went, and I was always the youngest one. And so I would always get escorted home. And my mom would say, can't you find somewhere else to go, you know? And I'd be like, no, not even a little bit. I'm not changing people, until they changed the decision to hang out with me. And then it was like, okay, let's move on. And then when I was 21, I got arrested at Shepherd's for assault on a police officer. I was in a blackout, and I woke up in jail, and that was the first time that I remember not remembering. I'm pretty sure I had, like, brownouts, you know, but that was, like, a full-blown blackout. I didn't know what I was in there for. I didn't know what happened. I don't know why I had, like, marks all over me. I mean, I'm like a dirty, like, sloppy, disgusting drunk, okay? There's nothing pretty about my alcoholism. I lie to myself, and I'm like, this is so sexy, as I'm drooling. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing cool about what's going on with me when I drink. And so I get arrested. I'm in, like, a Forever 21 shirt, and I'm like, you know, hammered. And my poor mother gets the phone call, and it's like, you know, this is, and I go, Iris, an inmate at Pinellas County Jail. My mom's like, what, you know, like, what do you mean? And I'm like, please find out what I did. And call me back. And she was like, I can't call you back, you know? And I'm like, okay, I'll try to call you back. And like, I had no idea what I was there for. Like none, not even a glimpse. I remember being at Shepherd's, and then I was in jail. And the events that transpired were I put my hands on a police officer. I told him, arrest me. And of course he did. And, you know, so that's how that goes. You break the law, whatever. Clearwater Police Department were on my first fifth step too, by the way. I was so mad at Pinellas County in general that that belonged on my first fourth step. And so by the time I was 21, I thought, screw this. This is Florida. I hate this. I hate it all. I'm going home. Home is Boston. I don't know if I said that yet. Home is Boston. I'm from Boston, okay? And my whole family was up there, except for my immediate. My parents were here, and my brothers were here. My oldest sister has lived up there pretty much her entire life. She did not move with us. My parents let her stay, which made me even more resentful. I'm 3 years younger than her, and they were like, you have no say. I'm like, she does, you know? And I mean, I was constantly looking at other people thinking that they had the better options than me, okay? And I go up there with this idea that, like, I'm just gonna be different. I'm away, so it's cool. No one's gonna know me. Which my family did, but I saw them twice the entire time I was up there. One of which my sister had to come over to my house, wash my hair for me, it was Easter, and we were supposed to go to my grandmother's, and she came into my house and was like, what are you doing? The way I'm living by the time I was 22 is I'm drinking every single day. Every single day. And at this point, it's whether I want to or not. There are ashtrays, bottles, just filth in this room of this house that I'm in. Now, upon moving up there, I know, okay, this was requested, which is ridiculous. Upon moving up there, my grandfather, my dad's dad, gives me some money, enough money, more than enough money to get situated. Because, of course, I don't plan before I move. I move in January, okay, for one. And I move without a job. I go to roommates.com and find this house in Somerville. And with these three girls that I don't know. I didn't even visit them, like, to have, like, an initial. I just showed up and was like, hey, I'm from Florida, you know. And, like, my sister and I went to IKEA. And with my grandfather's money that he gave me to, like, set up shop. And a huge portion of that money was to go to bills. Yeah. And we went to IKEA to buy some furniture. And I'm walking through, and I'm just miserable, you know. And cold. I was like, this is too cold. What the fuck? She's like, you just got here, you know. And I'm like, I don't know. And I buy a bed, okay? I buy a bed, I buy a comforter, and I buy a pillow. And that's it. I'm like, I don't need anything else. We get back to my house, and we're putting the bed together. And unbeknownst to me, because I'm just full of self and not in reality, it is a child's crib. It is a children's crib. Now, I'm about the same size now that I was then, okay? Not that much has changed. I stayed in the crib. I didn't return the crib. My sister, who was, again, not me, you know, has some wherewithal, was like, we need to return this. Ooh, at least it wasn't the camera this time.
What the fuck?
Okay, I watched you do this. Hold on. Oh, God. Fine. Fine. Okay. Thank you. Oh, I was like, you don't need to stand up here. That's even worse. Okay. Okay. Thank you. I was like, I just hold it. Beautiful. You're a lifesaver. Don't touch it. Okay. Huh. Don't touch the stove. Huh? Okay. That's like the worst thing you can say to an alcoholic. Don't do X, Y, and Z. It's like, or what? You know? Okay. So we open the box, and it's a child's crib. And my sister, again, is like, we need to return this. You know? You're an adult. And I'm like, no. It was like $40, you know? And like, I'm not trying to buy a whole bed here. We don't know how long I'm going to be. Like, it's totally fine. And she's like, it's not fine, but it's your life. Whatever. So I end up sleeping in this crib. Now, I have the sides that I put down. But, I mean, I'm 5'7", and so I'm like this, you know? And, like, I have a comforter. I don't have, like, a mattress. I have a crib and a comforter, okay, and a pillow. And that's what I proceed to sleep next to, if I sleep. At that point, I'm just passing out, okay? There's no real legitimate, like, healthful sleep anymore or rest. And, yeah, and I blew the rest of the money. I blew through the rest of the money. I got a job immediately as a bartender, and every single dime I made would go right back in. And in Boston, they had this thing where it was like a two-drink, you got two shift drinks per shift, which was a lovely appetizer for me, you know, like it whet my appetite. And what I would do is I would just get wasted every single night. Now, at this point, my employment record is not stellar. I've hit every single restaurant in Tampa, you know, before I moved, and I always got the t-shirt and always went to the orientations. And then the first night, whenever that was, that I would get alcohol in me, I would be just a menace. Like, I would either not show up the next day. I would show up with, like, my married boss. Sorry. my boyfriend, I'm like, you can earmuff this. Just really inappropriate, not cool, not cute, again, stuff. Hating myself stuff. That's what started happening, was that, like, I started hating myself. And my actions were really reflective of that, you know. Not only am I not physically taking care of myself. Oh, I was like, oh, thank you? Okay, you're welcome. How much time? A lot? Oh, God, okay. Thank you. But I wasn't treating myself or anyone else around me at that point well, okay? And so by the time I was 22, I had moved to Boston. I saw my family twice, you know? One of them was Easter when I, like, made my sister, I told you, she washed my hair for me and all that. I made her drive through the Packy and get some alcohol on the way to my grandmother's house because I couldn't not drink. And she was like, I don't understand. I don't understand why you have to do this. And my reaction to her, my response was, I don't understand why you don't. I don't understand how you are just perfectly okay without anything to cope with all of this, all of this. And she was like, all of what? And I'm like, just life, Chelsea. Like, I it's just too much, you know? And at 22 was too much for me. And so I took another 2 years and really did a number on myself. I had a bottom at one of my friend's parties, and I ended up in a blackout again. I came to my mom's house, and I had told my brother, my mom was at work, it was like early the next day, and I had told my brother that I was done with this. I was just done, and I'm gonna see myself out, you know? And he was like, what the fuck are you talking? And I'm like, I love you so much. Like, I was really dramatic. I'm like, I love you so much. Don't come after me, you know? And I downed a bottle of pills and woke up in the hospital 3 days later. And the doctors, when I woke up, everyone was there. My sister was there. My family was there. They like flew, you know, people in, and the doctor said I had a 0.48 blood alcohol level. And he said, you didn't even need the pills. What were you doing? And I'm like, you know, and at the time, to save face, I was like, I didn't mean to, you know, like, okay, but like, everyone can go home now, like, I'm fine. And it was my sister who was like, she's not fine. Like, she's not fine. She needs to be somewhere safe. She's a danger to herself and others. And so I was immediately Baker acted. Because what happened was I hit some sort of bottom in Boston. My grandmother called me. I told her I was trying to drink myself to death. And so she called my mom. I told my mom the same thing. She put me on a plane here. And 2 weeks later is when I was hospitalized. Now, I'm moving back in with my mom. I'm 24 now. And I feel like the harder I'm trying to live, the more difficult it is. There is nothing I'm doing at this point to get out of this whole situation of a life that I've created. I don't see it that way, but I remember feeling like this is way too hard and I don't know how to stop it. I can't do anything about it. I had not called myself an alcoholic yet either, which is wild to me now. Everyone else had, you know, everyone else was like, yo, you got a problem. And I'm like, you're the problem. So on and so forth, you know, but I didn't even admit out loud that I was an alcoholic until my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't say it out loud once, not ever. And so I had moved in with my mom, and there were these three girls. My mom was like trying to find us a nice place. I don't know. My mom, bless her, but she was like, if I just keep Iris under my thumb, she'll change, you know? And like, nope. What I would do is rob you blind, you know? And which is terrible, terrible. I did terrible things to people that I love. I did horrible, and I would help her look for the money. You know what I mean? Like it was terrible how I treated people. I couldn't see past my nose. I was so self-involved in what I needed to do to get what I needed to get that like you just were in the, just, I would scream at my mother for like $20, you know, because I had no money. I had nothing to show for anything in my life. And I'd be like, just give me $20. And she'd be like, if you stop screaming at me, sure. Like I was abusive. I mean, there's nothing, again, cool or sexy or funny about abuse at all in any form. And I became abusive. I mean, I became verbally, emotionally, mentally abusive to people around me. And she would. She would cry and like shake and give me the money out of her hand, and I would take it and I would dip over and over and over and over, you know? So I'm out of this hospital and I'm with her and she's got hope. And that's cute, you know? Thank you. But I can't not drink. I'm out of the hospital after a Baker Act and I'm like, the first thing I think of is drinking. The first thing. It's not those groups, you know? That was great. Nope. The first thing I thought of was I need to call my friends who I've missed because I've been in Boston. We need to go meet up and I'm going to go drink. That's the first thought. And I followed that up exactly with what happened, you know, and in the interim of that, my mom and I were looking for apartments because again, she wanted to find us a nice place to live. God bless her. And we're at like our third apartment, and this is July 2008. We're like at this pool of like one of the complexes, right? And these like girls are at the pool, like suntanning, whatever. I'm like sweating, needing a drink, you know, like I could care less about what's going on here. I could not care less. Excuse me. I'm an English teacher today. Thank you very much. I could not care any less. So these three girls were at the pool. I don't think anything of it, whatever, whatever, whatever. We end up living there. We end up moving into this complex in Tampa in 2008. About a week later, my father comes over to my mom's and I'm like, what's up, Steve? You know, and at this point, I mean, he's told me multiple times that he's not only afraid of me, but now he's afraid for me, my alcoholic, raging alcoholic father, mind you. Okay. And I'm like, you're afraid for me. Like, what are we talking about? And he did. And he came over, he had a conversation with my mother and said, look, we don't have any money. Okay. We don't have any money. We don't know what to do with you. We think you should try a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, you can go, you know, you go report back. Let me know how it is. And he's like, I'll go with you. I'll go with you. And I had no idea about you guys. I didn't know what you were about. I didn't go to treatment. I didn't go to rehab. Like, I don't know what AA is about. The only association I have with Alcoholics Anonymous at that point, I had a friend in high school who drank, in my brain, worse than me. She went off to AA, and then I started getting called her name when I was drinking. That's the association I had with AA, okay? I was like, oh, God, I'm going to end up where Whitney went. You know what I mean? And, like, here I am. And she's not anymore. That's not funny. That's terrible. We have a really good shot here. You know what I mean? Like, if you're here, if you're sitting in the seat right now, you got a chance, man. Don't waste it. Do not. For real. Not a lot of us make this. The majority of us don't make this. So I do. I end up saying sure to my dad. And he takes me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's at this church called Wellspring on a Wednesday night. It's on Sheldon. And I make him sit in the car. Because I'm like, what if I want to talk about you? You know? And he's like, okay, I'll sit in the car. So we sat in the car for the whole hour. And I kid you not. I kid you not. All three girls that were at the pool when my mom and I were checking that out, that I agreed to go, and that's where we said, they were at that meeting, all three of them. And one of them came up to me and said, I live at that complex. Was it you with your mom or a woman? I said, yeah. She became my first sponsor, and that was in 2008, and she brought me here to YPG. That's how I came to AA, and I got involved immediately. And not necessarily because I wanted to. Now, despite popular opinion here, I don't stay sober because I didn't stay sober because I wanted to. I didn't stay sober because I thought I needed to. I stay sober today because I do the things that are required to stay sober. It has nothing, I'll say it again, it has nothing to do with my feelings or my thoughts. Only my actions. My actions count. That's what counts. You guys watch me. You guys know how I act. You are the first ones, as you should, to call me out when I'm messing up. Like I said earlier, I affect everyone around me by my behaviors, okay? And today, it's way easier to be a like productive, happy, somewhat sane member of society. No one claims that you can, you know, I mean, we're insane. By the way, the definition of insanity for us, yes, is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. But in the book, it talks about lacking a soundness of mind. That's the definition of insanity, lacking soundness of mind. And when I think of that definition, that makes perfect sense to me. I didn't have soundness of mind ever. I didn't have soundness of mind my first 2 years here. I relapsed a week before my 3 years. I got asked to speak at St. Pete at a speaker meeting, a really big speaker meeting. I cried the whole hour. My friend who asked me to speak on that Monday called me that Friday. He said, how did it go? I said, I'm drinking. I drank. So like, you know, and he was like, what? You know, and because it was like, if I'm not doing the things here, it's a matter of time. It's not an if proposition we got going on here. It's a when, you know, and it's been my experience of when I put things before my sobriety, namely God. All right. I have a sponsor whose job is to put my hand in God's hand. That's it. I get to God's hand through the steps. I get to God's hand through the phone. I get to God's hand through meetings, through listening, okay, through praying. I can get to God's hand in a number of ways. But it is mine and mine alone to pick up that and use those tools. It is not yours. Bill W. himself could have fucking sponsored me at one point, and I would have had nothing to say to him. You know what I mean? Like, when I got sober this time, there was so much pain. What happened in the only month, I was only out a month, right? I say only, like it's not a big deal. It was the worst month of my life because I had a solution here. I stopped working the steps and I got full of self, drinking every day. You guys were right. Drinking every day and thinking about AA, I wanted to kill myself again. I got there in a month. And I was detoxing on my mom's bathroom floor again. And I called the woman who's my sponsor still today. And I said, I need help. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to like eat a bullet. Like I don't know what else to do, you know. And it was a Saturday. And she's like, when's the last time you drank? I said, yesterday. She's like, come to Fever, you know. And I was like, nah, dude, not even a little bit. Like, nope, you know. And it's Saturday Night Fever is a really big meeting. With a lot of people, a lot of friends of mine that I had made friends with, those connections, those friends, it's absolutely true. You get here, you find your tribe, and they will hold you down when you're not getting to God quick enough. They will put your hand in God's hand too, okay? My tribe, thank God. When my sponsor's not available, when my voice is, I'm thinking God's and it's mine, my friends carry me. My friends have carried me. You guys have carried me through my entire sobriety, whether it's been celebrating really, really cool stuff, right? I almost didn't graduate high school. I now have a master's degree, okay? Which is wild, okay? Wild. You guys celebrated that with me and made me see like how good that is, you know, and gave me a reason to feel good about myself. When there are bad things going on, I was raped when I was 8 years sober. Oh God, it got really quiet. It's cool now. It's cool. I was on this path to like finding a guy. I saw all these people in the last 8 years of my sobriety get married and have kids and do the things. And I was really sad. And I was like, where is mine? I'm doing all the things. What's going on? Why isn't he here? Not knowing that he is God and fixing myself. And then that happened, and it changed my sobriety. I've never gotten close to a drink before then or after then. What that did instead of drink was change. And I think that's a huge thing in here, too. If we don't change, if I don't change, I drink, you know. And if I drink, I'm not going to change. I mean, there's no, you know. So that opened my eyes a lot to, like, actually leaning on God. And believing that whatever was going to happen for me in my sobriety was for the best because I didn't know how to live my life. I still don't. There's no big secret here. The longer I'm sober, the less I really understand about myself. You know what I mean? It's like a weird paradox. Like, I think I know some stuff because I've been around a while, but like, I don't know much. I don't. I've never been sober this long. Every day is a new day, you know? And like, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I know that if I trust in God 100% and I let go of the outcome, not only do I not have to resort to drinking again, because I don't ever have to drink again. You guys don't ever have to drink again. You know, and some of you are like, man, fuck this. And some of you are like, yes, I've been both, okay? I've been both. And to know that I'm free, like really, truly free from like the prison that I've placed myself in with alcohol, I get to walk through anything, and not even think about drinking, not picking up a drink, and letting people carry me through some pretty dark stuff. And then in turn, however long later, and I hate it when I'm in it, but it's true for me, helping somebody else. I can't tell you how many women have called me after I spoke about that and asked me how I got through that and not drank. And there were answers sometimes I was like, I don't know. I just held on. And you can too. And it's not even just about the nature of that. It's all relative, right? It's anything that completely rocks your world that you're like, I don't know if I can get through this sober. Yes, you fucking can. Yes, you can. And I know that for a fact. I know that for a fact. Because I'm here today. That's the worst thing that's ever happened. And I don't think about drinking. And I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm crying because, like, this is an incredible opportunity we have here that I take advantage of 99% of the time, daily. I'm an asshole sometimes. You know, I am. You can ask him. You know, you can ask Patty, my mom, all right? I'm not stealing from her anymore, right? But, like, I'm still self-centered, and I need this program every single day. The thing that happens, the switch for me, came from I needed to do this every single day to I get to do this every day. I get to live this life, you know, as a result of working the steps and being close to God and being actively sponsored, having a home group, having my tribe. I get a life that, like, I didn't even know that could be for me. Good and bad. Doesn't matter. All the same. I don't have to drink no matter what. And you guys taught me that. Thank you for keeping me sober. Thank you.